over at the 331 Club. They're starting their residency again, go through till May. So go on out there, support live music. The time is 10 o'clock, and you are listening to KFAI, 90.3 FM HD in Minneapolis, and on the web at kfai.com, or .org. Stay tuned. Coming up is the Wave Project.
You're listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI 90.3 FM HD, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and on the web at kfai.org. For the next 60 minutes, you'll be hearing The Wave Project, KFAI's weekly community access hour. If you'd like to produce your own one-hour radio program, information on applying can be found at kfai.org/Wave Project. The views expressed on this program are those of the persons expressing them and do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of Fresh Air's Incorporated Board of Directors, volunteers, or staff.
Was it Cesar Chavez? Maybe it was Dorothy Day. Some will say Dr. King or Gandhi set them on their way. No matter who your mentors are, it's pretty plain to see. If you've been to jail for justice, you're in good company. Have you been to jail for justice? I want to shake your hand. Sitting in and lying down, always to take a stand. Have you sung a song for freedom or marched that picket line? Have you been to jail for justice? Oh, you're a friend of mine. You law-abiding citizens, listen to this song. Laws were made by people, and people can be wrong. Once you law, but slavery was fine. Women were denied the vote and children worked the mine. The more you study history, the less you can deny it. A rotten law stays on the books till folks with guts defy it. Have you been to jail for justice? I want to shake your hand. Sitting in and lying down are ways to take a stand. Have you sung a song for freedom or marched that picket line? Have you been to jail for justice? Oh, you're a friend of mine. Now the law's supposed to serve us, and so are the police. When that system fails, it's up to us to speak our peace. It takes eternal vigilance for justice to prevail. So get courage from your convictions. Let them haul you off to jail. Have you been to jail for justice? I want to shake your hand. Sitting in and lying down are ways to take a stand. Have you sung a song for freedom or marched that picket line? Have you been to jail for justice? Will you go to jail for justice? Have you been to jail for justice? Oh, you're a friend of mine.
Welcome to another Veterans for Peace Hour. I'm your host, Dave Logsdon, the current president of this wonderful chapter of amazing veteran activists, peace activists. That was, you just heard Annie Feeney, the late Annie Feeney, wonderful activist and singer who sang that, which I consider an anthem, is Have You Been to Jail for Justice? And that is a theme song for an for activists today, I think. And a lot of people say, well, that's kind of extreme, but I think these are extreme times, and they call for extreme measures. And with me in the studio today are two people who some people would view as kind of extreme people, but I consider them comrades. We have a Marie Purcell.
How you doing?
I've never even pronounced your last name.
That would be correct. Nicely done.
It'd be hard to mess that one up. And Marie is a veteran, member of Vets for Peace, and who's really been a real boon to our chapter in that we bring, as you remember, Veterans for Peace is going on our 40th year, just like WHAM has already gone 40, but...
I've gone 40.
Yeah, I know. 40. I kind of remember 40 years ago, but we've been skewed to be more older Vietnam vets, and generally speaking, it's older white Vietnam vets, like it or not, and that's just the way it's been. But since the post 9/11, we are trying to provide safe space and opportunities for voices of younger vets. And since there's been an explosion of young women vets since 9/11, and Marie is representative of that group. Welcome, Marie.
Oh, thank you so much, Dave. It's an honor and a pleasure to be here. I guess I'll just tell you a little bit about myself. I'm 40 years old. I am a post 9/11 vet, like relatively shortly after 9/11. I joined in 2004, the United States Army. I was in military intelligence during my first deployment, which was to the occupation of Iraq. I realized, oh, shit, what have I done to myself? I come from a line of military. Oh, I'm so sorry.
That's okay.
You know, I actually told myself, I was like, don't swear, Marie. Don't
just
swear.
Just say bleep.
Bleep. but anyway, yeah, so I ended up realizing just about 6 weeks into that deployment what I was really a part of. And, you know, it's taken me a very, very long time to even be prepared to grapple, like, with my own complicity in all of this. And I think since the escalation of the ongoing genocide in Gaza is when I've really finally recognized that not only do I need to confront my past military experience and history, but it's going to be necessary not just for my own wellness, but it's really like my calling. It's what I'm supposed to be doing, and so I'm excited to use my voice and my story and to help veterans recognize, like, we're only going to heal from this deep moral injury that so many of us have from participating in the military-industrial complex by actively disrupting our own complicity as veterans and as so-called Americans. So, yeah, it's a pleasure to be here. Thanks, Dave.
Yeah. Well, welcome. And we also have with us Cedar Larson, who is a member of Women Against Military Madness. Our sisters in arms or our arms way are getting in the way of arms. Welcome, Cedar.
Thanks, Dave. I'm happy to be here. Also, I'm like, as you were talking, Marie, I was like, oh, I have like a opposite story of my parents were anti-war, of the anti-war mind when I was growing up. I grew up during the Iraq war and the war in Afghanistan, and that's having that background is what kind of made me think every time there was some sort of outrage of, you know, another U.S. intervention, another U.S. Attack on foreign soil, or attacks on us as people in terms of our rights here in the U.S., I've always just been like, oh, that's what my parents were talking about. And so, yeah, I came to join Women Against Military Madness after I moved back to the Twin Cities in 2023. And, you know, shortly after that is when Al-Aqsa flood happened on October 7th. And it made me, you know, even more activated to join an organization. And then I was lucky enough to meet Dave.
Yeah,
well, thank you.
I was lucky enough to meet you, but the and it is interesting because you join an organization, and most of the women in Women Against Military Madness, some of them have been doing it for 40 years, they were welcoming of a younger voice too.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. I mean, even some of us who like to think that we're still teenagers, even though I just turned 80, realize that the end game is probably not that far away. You know, so we it's really important that we hear the younger voices and activists, even though oftentimes younger activists want to take it a step further, probably faster and more strident than perhaps some of the older vets. Although some of us older vets, like Roger and Joe and people like that, are pretty. They're not afraid to storm the barricades any more than the young vets, you know. So.
Well, you know, I kind of just sit in the middle here, right? Like, I consider myself middle age at this point. I'm going to be 41 in December. And one thing, part of the reason I joined Veterans for Peace after a long time of really not even wanting to confront my own military past, I separated as a conscientious objector in 2008 after some pretty serious retaliation from my unit for attempting to do so, including a second deployment while I was in the midst of that process. And it was all very traumatizing. But one thing I've appreciated about Vets for Peace is there's a real like strength in that legacy. You know, there's a Vets for Peace has had just some incredible work that we have done over the decades, 40 years since I've been born, quite literally.
Yeah.
And what I see is a lot of new, younger energy coming in to the national organization. And I really hope to see and help bring young energy into our local chapter here as well. And so what I've seen is vets, you know, that are in their 60s, 70s, 80s, who are just as radical as I am, who are just ready to take to the streets in really powerful ways to disrupt and to escalate on behalf of the people of Gaza, but not just with regard to that, but with regard to the climate crisis, with regard to so many other things to confront the military-industrial complex. It's a real incredible organization.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to share that bit. Yeah.
And also, you listeners out there, of 25 of you out there, if you're riding around in your car, or if you're sitting at home and you got a piece of paper and pen, it would be really nice to get a pen and pad next to you while you're listening to the program, because you'll be getting information that you it'd be very valuable for you to follow up on, including going to veteransforpeace.org, which is all one letter, and you can find all the information about the Veterans for Peace and how you can join if you're a veteran or associate member. And Cedar could be a member of Vets for Peace.
That's great, Cedar.
If we give
her, you're going to get recruited.
Just like Dave can be a member of Women Against Military Madness, and he is.
I am.
Are you truly, Dave?
I am proud to be a member of Women Against Military Madness.
Amazing.
And accept the fact that I could never be a leader in that organization.
Yeah.
But
right.
I'm glad to be there in support. Because, I mean, the way it's set up, if you go to where our headquarters is, at 4200 Cedar, WAM is the mothership. And WAM has a paid staff and a great budget. And we use them, frankly. We use them.
How do you join WAM? Tell us, Cedar.
You can go on our website, womenagainstmilitarymadness.org, and to be a member, you know, you can offer an annual donation, essentially, and then you receive a newsletter every few months, and you're also part of our broad membership. There aren't really other constraints or obligations, I guess, to becoming a member. It's really easy, and we definitely welcome it. We host weekly rallies of like lots of different types of different sort of aspects of the movement. Our main one being on Fridays at 4 p.m. at Summit and Snelling in St. Paul to free Palestine.
It's very raucous too.
It's a raucous rally.
Raucous rally.
It's every Friday since 1991 they've been there. So those types of things are sent out in like an e-calendar and other events around the Twin Cities area so that you can stay plugged in, and you get that if you're a member, although you can also get it without being a member. So, we welcome all members of all of all types.
Absolutely. And I'd be remiss not to mention KFAI. You can become a member of KFAI, even though the pledge drive is over. This is the after the pledge drive appeal, because really this is an amazing opportunity for people of our ilk to be able to spill our guts and talk about these very strong issues that aren't getting covered in mainstream media. Let's face it.
Oh, it's horrifying.
Even the public radio, they're all and KFAI does get some. They used to get money from the national groups like NPR and stuff, but the reality is that it's people out in the listening audience who have that spare money floating around and want to give a donation to KFAI. It really is important, because that's the only way this thing's going to keep going. And if people don't know this, KFAI, it's a phenomenon, because it's like all these people are all volunteers, some of them 35, 40 years, like Don Olson, keeps troop head going out and having his program every week, volunteer for like 30, 40 years. Pretty amazing. And we want to keep this going, and we ought to keep these great studios and these great people and engineers like Pam, highly paid engineers like Pam here, who's helping us today.
Well, the reality too is,
seriously, I'm a member. I'm also a sustaining member, and you can become a sustaining member of WAM or not.
That's for peace. Absolutely.
And sustaining members is like, they just take it out of your account. So therefore, I don't have to worry about writing a check. I just, and it's like a couple of lattes, or for me, a couple of beers. you're all set. But anyway, we spent a lot of time in introductions. I think it's important that people know how to contact it and become part of the thing. Because we're going to get into... we'll probably should stop for a little PSA from the station, and then we'll dive into the weeds there.
Support for KFAI comes from First Avenue, presenting Acid Mother's Temple at the Turf Club Wednesday, October 15th. Acid Mother's Temple is a Japanese psychedelic rock band formed in 1995 by members of the Acid Mother's Temple Soul Collective as a freakout group for the 21st century. Technically, their touring group is Acid Mother's Temple and the Melting Paraiso UFO, but who are we to quibble? They're touring with their latest release, Holy Black Mountainside. Opening the show are the Max. More information about Acid Mother's Temple and the Melting Paraiso UFO at the Turf Club is available at first-avenue.com.
Tune in to hear Minnesota's newest statewide newscast, North Star Stories, Voices from Where We Live.
Each week, we bring you stories and perspectives from across the state's diverse communities.
North Star Stories amplifies voices too often missing from our state's news.
Black, Indigenous, and communities of color,
people living with disabilities, elders,
LGBTQIA Two-Spirit residents, and those in greater Minnesota.
Find North Star Stories, Voices from Where We Live in your station schedule and wherever you get your podcasts.
Produced by Ampers, Diverse Radio for Minnesota's communities.
Every Friday at 1 p.m. right here on 90.3 FM KFAI.
Thanks for tuning into The Wave Project today. It's Veterans for Peace with guests. Another Veteran for Peace member and Women Against Military Madness will rejoin that program in just a moment. I just want to thank everybody who supported us during the recent fall pledge drive, and just put a little information out there that, yes, KFAI did used to take part in the Corporation for Public Broadcasting money. That was money that Congress set aside in the 40s, knowing how important radio airwaves are, and created a completely independent body that distributed funds funds from our taxes to stations across the country that are considered public and community radio, and that money we know has been clawed back. So we've never had an affiliation with National Public Radio. However, we're independent, and we thank you so much for all of your support. We now go to a song, and then we will hear more from the Veterans for Peace and Women Against Military Madness.
Buddhists and the Baptists, Quakers and Catholics too, the atheists and agnostics, Muslims and Jews. We need people of all nations, all colors and all creeds, to put an end to war now, put an end to greed. Gonna take us all to make a change, take us all to win the peace. Gonna take us all in the streets, gonna take us all. It's gonna take us all. We need the immigrants and the unions, the greens and the gays, hip-hoppers and bebopers and women for equal pay. Farm workers out in the sun, homeless out in the rain, seniors and soccer moms for a world that is humane. Gonna take us all to make a change, take us all to win the peace. Gonna take us all in the streets, gonna take us all. It's gonna take us all. Socialists and the anarchists, the pacifists and the humanists. Every culture and community takes black and white and brown. Times we won't see eye to eye, but we stand on common ground. Gonna take us all to make a change, take us all to win the peace. Gonna take us all in the streets, gonna take us all to make a change, all to win the peace, all in the streets, all. Gonna take us all.
Welcome back. Welcome back on this rainy morning. It's just bizarre. It's like the marathon and people are getting all wet, but it's supposed to, it won't be too bad. But it's made Pam almost late for a show. because of the marathon.
That's so rude.
You know, you have to plan. But if you're going out, plan for the marathon. If you're going across the route here, but anyway, good luck to all those people running that marathon. A real quick announcement before we dive into what the most pressing issue of this time. And you know, a lot of times people say, "Well, what about this? And what about Venezuela and the U.S.?" And it's like, and what about ICE? But people that are being children are being starved, and the U.S. complicity in that. We have to get into that and talk about that. But there'll be times and opportunities to talk and get involved with other topics as well. So I am going to use this time really quickly to talk about our Veterans for Peace annual trip to on Indigenous Peoples Day to Mankato, Minnesota. They have that amazing, powerful memorial there in downtown Mankato, which is the white buffalo, which is a spirit animal, and then they also have the scroll of the names of the Dakota 38, the 38 Dakota men that were hung simultaneously in an atmosphere that was unlike Super Bowl Sunday, and people were bringing picnic lunches, and you know, it seems just bizarre and obscene. But we go down there and memorialize the Dakota 38. We do a 38-minute silent procession. Every minute we stop, we hit a drum, we ring a bell, and then Chris Matonupa, our Dakota elder and genocide scholar, he reads a name of one of the Dakota people and usually gives a little bit of a background. So he knows how to read the names in Dakota. So it really adds a lot. We usually have the TV and the TV station from Mankato and the newspaper people cover. So it's 10 o'clock on Indigenous Peoples Day, which is a week from tomorrow. At 10 o'clock in the morning, downtown Mankato. So if you're in the area and you want to come down and be part of a very, very, very profound way of remembering people that should be remembered. Anyway, the other thing, on the October 24th, a Friday, at 4 o'clock at Edina Theater, as part of the Twin Cities Film Festival, a movie called The Doctrine by a filmmaker, Gwendolyn Cates, who filmed the indigenous youth who went to the Vatican to ask for the final dissolving of the Doctrine of Discovery, which was the doctrine years ago when Columbus came to the New World. He came back and he says, "Geez," I said, "this is really great. There's a lot of good stuff here, but there's people that are living there, and that might be a problem." So they get the Pope on the cell phone, so I dial him up and say, "Hey, what can we do here?" And the Pope issued a papal bull that said, "Well, if they're not Christians and they don't convert to Christianity, then you have a right to kill them and take their land." So, and ironically, it's kind of the template that's going on today in Gaza.
That's right.
So if you get a chance on the 24th of October, it's a Friday at 4 o'clock, which runs, I might not make the usual Friday vigil for Rally for Palestine, but that it's an important film. So we had a hand in it. We had a hand in getting this thing to the theater. So I'm excited about that. Anyway, so the genocide that happened with the Native people, where 95% of the inhabitants of Turtle Island were displaced and killed by the settler colonials, and my own history has going back to 1652, settler colonialists that moved westward, you know. So anyway, we're going to go right to Cedar, and Cedar, give us a little just wing it.
Thanks for the setup. So I suppose people are probably aware that we're reaching 2 years of resistance and 2 years of this horrific ongoing genocide that's happening against the Palestinians in Gaza, but also what a lot of people in the West Bank are calling a slow genocide, mm-hmm. as they're being attacked and annexed as well. But we've seen, 66,000 deaths, and that's a far, far undercount, just because the infrastructure that there is to count these deaths is lacking. So I know recently a study came out that suspects, upwards of 600,000 yeah. deaths in 2 years. So as we reach October 7th, we're recognizing the Palestinians in their resistance and their continuing fight for a free Palestine and for self-determination and national liberation. We at WAM, like I said, have a rally every Friday for Palestine, but we strongly hold that whatever happens to free Palestine should be under the Palestinians' decision and should be, within their ability to declare, rather than, the United States or Donald Trump is, starting this plan that he has for how the genocide will end. And we know that is just an excuse to ethnically cleanse and then build whatever he wants to in that area. So we know that none of those things are peaceful and are rather continual ethnic cleansing and displacement of Palestinians in order to accomplish Western goals. And I know you mentioned before Venezuela and mm-hmm. ICE raids here, and I just want to say that all of those things are connected under U.S. imperialism.
Absolutely.
There's a kind of sometimes an attempt to say, like, this isn't our issue or that's someone else's issue, but the ruling class will have all of us fighting each other until it kills all of us. So we know that as workers and as working people in capitalism and under U.S. imperialism, we're stronger together. And when we fight these issues together, recognizing that the same interests that want Western U.S. domination over the Middle East also want that domination over Central and South America for mm-hmm. resources and for, like in Venezuela, a lot of that is about oil and is, again, still killing people. And then ICE here in our streets is part of that same issue. So we know that the increased military budget goes right along with the increased ICE budget that upped the ICE budget by extraordinary amounts over the summer. That would be my...
We have yet to feel the impacts of that, too. They're feeling it on the front lines in cities like Los Angeles and Chicago and D.C. and Chicago. Yeah. There's some horrifying stories that are coming out of mm-hmm. Chicago, but I agree. I think the most pressing issue of our time is not just the genocide that has been ongoing, not just the past 2 years, is certainly the escalation in the occupied Palestinian territories, but truly U.S. imperialism for the mm-hmm. last 400 plus years. Mm-hmm. And all of these issues, I fully agree, are completely connected. Imperialism at home and imperialism abroad, they might have different names, these various enforcement agencies, whether mm-hmm. it's IOF or ICE or DHS, they're all occupation mm-hmm. forces in my mind.
Mm-hmm. Well, absolutely. And now, I know the indivisible, or is it the hands off, I don't know, are they the same people? But the people that were, I always say that the indivisible people were invisible when Biden mm-hmm. was supporting Israel's genocide actions. But that's fine. Good to see people in the streets. But it's also, I thought it was interesting when you spoke at that first rally, mm-hmm. and you were the only one that, I think maybe somebody else made a reference to, but you're the only one who brought up Gaza.
Yeah, I think that's something that a lot of times we are living in really tough times here, right? Like, we are finding our social services being stripped away. We live paycheck to paycheck. A lot of people can't afford a two-bedroom apartment in most states in this country. So we know that people are fighting just for survival. And so when we see these people coming into the streets for domestic issues or for attacks against Medicaid and attacks on our immigrant neighbors, like we want to connect those issues, and mm-hmm. we want to bring people in to understand that the money that we're sending to Israel to commit genocide and the money we're spending on weapons that we send to Israel could be money that we use here. And so while it takes a little bit of like digging to understand that, you know, it's all coming from this bucket that we could use in so many other ways. We could, with the money that we've spent on this genocide, you know, done so many other things for the people here. And so that's kind of what I wanted to talk about there, is that when we're attacking people in Palestine, we think that it's not affecting us, but it is. It's affecting us in just our moral understanding of how to react to what our government is doing and how we should act in response, because we are no better than the people in Palestine. We have no right to think that it's okay for a government to be genociding its population just because it's not in our country. But we also need to understand
those borders.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Outside the mind and inside the mind.
Yeah, it's like out of sight, out of mind, but it really shouldn't be, because it's, like I said, it's all coming from this bucket of money that we could be using to help ourselves here, or to help our, you know, unhoused neighbors, or any number of things that we could be doing. Mm-hmm. So that's... And similarly, like what we saw with Mahmoud Khalil, is that you can be deported, you can be arrested for just speaking about Palestine or just speaking about mm-hmm. these issues, and that he's a green card holder. It doesn't matter. You are still at threat under any attacks of free speech. So that's kind of what I wanted to talk about there, was that this isn't a faraway issue. And if we're saying hands off, we should also be saying hands off Gaza. And the crowd was super receptive. Like, it was a really,
it was really receptive.
It feels like it's more of an organizer problem and less of a general, like the folks who show up are like, yeah, we're here mm-hmm. for Gaza. Mm-hmm. Of course we are here for Gaza. Mm-hmm.
And I know circulating, giving out my watermelon magnets and Free Palestine car magnets, that people were very receptive, and people said, oh, you got anyone there? People were excited. There was an excitement level for it. But so it was, I did mean when I said that the indivisible people were invisible as a kind of a snarky remark.
I'm just saying,
duly noted yeah. because it isn't a Democrat or a Republican issues what's going on in this country.
Well, it really shows how much we like people need to recognize that as you're waking up to XYZ, whatever it is, we need to recognize that that's a journey. And so mm-hmm. you're waking up to something now. You need to recognize that you've been ignorant or wrong about other things. This is what's happened to me over the last couple of years, especially, is just how much my own worldview has expanded through the openness of recognizing that there's things I don't know. There's things I know I don't know. There's things I don't even know that I don't even know. Mm-hmm. And the more that we can have that openness and encourage that openness and willingness to really question everything,
I think is how we bridge
those gaps.
I will say that as a young mother...
Yeah.
You have two kids.
I do. And I want to say hello to Sylvie and Hazel. Hello, my babies, my baby girls. And hello to Charlie as well, who's home with them, who's my partner. You know, to me, there's this like, I don't remember how long ago it was. It was probably back maybe just after the first Trump election that I went to a BLM rally, and there was an incredible speaker, and I wish that I knew who they were, and I wish I could credit them because they changed my worldview in a really big way, because there was something that I had sensed, something that I had felt for a long time that I feel like there was this violation that I felt the moral injury of. And then when this person said these words, I mean, it was just like it was a total paradigm shift, or at least a recognition of where that was coming from. And that is, there are no such thing as other people's children. There are no such thing as other people's children. And what is happening to the children in Gaza, what is happening to children here in our communities who are being stolen away from their families, put into... They put toddlers in zip ties in Chicago this week. They put toddlers in zip ties in Chicago this week. And that is such a human violation. And anyone who is bearing like true and sustained witness to all of this, if you're a parent especially, like... it's so hard to just go on. You know, there's such a deep sense of hopelessness and despair. And I say that as a person who has an incredibly great amount of privilege. I'm a white woman in a middle income. We have a home. We have a lot of safety built in around us that was very intentionally designed by these systems to keep us comfortable and quiet. And the reality is we don't have that clarity of mind that there are no such thing as other people's children. And I think that if we did, we would be moving and acting a lot differently than we're seeing.
That's an extremely important point in relatability. And I think is the idea with children and people have children. I do remember one time I was walking, we were in Paris. It was like around the 2001, my partner, former partner, and I were, and we were walking down the street, and it was a plaque that had, at the time, my granddaughter, who now is my grandson, my granddaughter was like the same age as the kids the plaque was talking about. And you're talking about the children that were taken out of their kindergarten class and taken to the camps.
Horrifying.
And you know, it's just, we're just walking, casually walking along, and all of a sudden I'm in the middle of this existential, emotional state because it brought it home. It's just like you say, it's that immediacy of, hey, that's, that could be, and it happened to my granddaughter at the time was, one quarter Jewish, so she would have been in the camps. She would have been taken out for sure.
Yeah,
and I think that's like when we see how unwilling our government is to respond to what is happening in Palestine or any government really. It gives permission for the U.S. to do that to its own citizens.
That's right.
Because if the people in power are so unwilling to respond and so easy to turn away from the suffering of Palestinian children, they will do the same thing to children here, especially black
and
brown children.
And
it's already happening.
It has been.
Yep. That's how the social safety nets are able to be cut so drastically, is that they just turn away and they don't look and they don't care. And that's the other thing is, like, at a WAM rally on a Friday, I saw a little girl, she was probably like 7 or 8, writing in chalk on the sidewalk, "Kids like me need help." It's like they can see it. You have to be intentional.
They know
about not caring. Like, it is a huge choice, and it is a choice made from money, mostly lobbying and AIPAC and things like that make it so that these politicians won't respond.
I'm so glad you said that about kids knowing. Like, I feel like this world that we live in, this society that we live in, poisons us from the moment we're born. But children, they hold on, they retain that wisdom until it is socialized out of them. And like, so I'm a big believer in listening to the children and listening to, they know what they need. They need safety. They need to be fed and housed. They need to play and feel joy. And I feel like that's an area that adults could especially take some leadership from with regard to kids. But yeah, it's just absolutely devastating. I would just say, like, society's silence and inaction is allowing to happen to children on such a highly visible level. I think that's the worst part about all of this, and is that it's just so incredibly visible. We're talking about a live-streamed escalation of genocide. It's some of the most horrifying images and videos.
Tell us more about the Alliant, your working group about Alliant. Alliance.
We're talking like. I'm talking more specifically about what is being done to children in Gaza.
Yeah.
And I'm talking specifically about I don't believe that if you're not doing much, you certainly cannot be bearing witness. If you're bearing witness to what is being done to children and families and Palestinian men and women, if you're bearing true witness to that, I don't understand how you're not doing everything in your power to stop it. And that, to me, is perhaps the biggest issue, right? We were talking earlier about media, and I just want to plug independent media because independent media is the only way that we're going to really be able to get these stories out there because corporate media is owned by, corporations. and they have a very specific agenda, and that is absolutely to just keep lining the pockets of their owning billionaire class. And so I think we need to be putting a lot more pressure on corporate media. But while we're doing that, like programs like this and conversations like this here on this station and on others is so important. So
what can we do? That is the next.
Oh, there's so much.
For example, I know, Cedar, you're working. If you go to the WAM, Women Against Military Madness, their website, it's always a great reference point because it's much better than ours, our website. But because they have they really do a nice job of the scheduling of events and organizing events, two big factors. You know,
It's not just about like what am I going to do as an individual because that is, but it's really hard and draining to just do something all by yourself, which is why all of us are part of organizations that that spread that energy and encourage each other. Right now Women Against Military Madness has a campaign against Waterfall Security Solutions, which is an Israeli cybersecurity company that oversees the security of St. Paul's water, which is just so bizarre because why do you need this apartheid state to have any business with our water when you know that Palestinians in Gaza don't have clean water? So every time you're taking a drink of water, you're thinking this apartheid state is economically is complicit, but we are complicit by our contracting with them economically to further their economy, which we know. With the South African apartheid, economic boycotts and divestment was a key factor in ending that system. And so that's what we're trying to do now with Waterfall is to convince them to cut this contract, which is for $74,000 in a year, per year. So it's not an outrageous amount of money, but that also means it is an easy amount of money to reallocate or find someone else. It is not the worst thing ever to stop working with this Israeli company. So we have been calling them, and they've gotten hundreds and hundreds of calls and emails from us to cut this contract, but it's the St. Paul Board of Water Commissioners that makes this choice. So not only St. Paul, but also Falcon Heights, Lauderdale, West St. Paul, Lilydale, Maplewood, Mendota Heights are all part of this, getting this same service from Waterfall Security. So we have been going to their meetings and disrupting. We went in July and didn't really disrupt. We just chanted.
You disrupted it, but that's
sure,
okay.
Sure, but we didn't.
They needed to be
in
disrupted.
In August, we disrupted.
Mike Madden, who worked really strong with you on this, and they did it a very reasonable way, wanted to be on the agenda, put us on the agenda so we could say what our concerns are. And then they said, well, we can't put it on the agenda. Yeah.
I've appreciated the strategy of this campaign because it seems to have gotten some movement.
Yeah, they have started a request for information, which is kind of, it doesn't force them to change the company, but it does give them a little bit of responsibility to at least look for other options or find, essentially get, it means that they are getting information about other companies that could provide the same service, yeah. Other than Waterfall.
And they're contracted for this year already.
Yep, so October 2026 would be the date that this contract expires, and we want them to let it expire.
Oh, okay.
To cut it if they can. Like, yeah. Definitely they're, you know, like I said, it's only $74,000. But yeah, at the very least, do not renew it in 2026. And yeah, so we want them to come up with another company. We are calling them on the phone, so you can call them as well. Like Dave said, if you have a piece of paper and a pen, you can write this down. But you can call them at 651-266-6350 extension 7 and leave them a voicemail saying that you don't want your water tainted by Israeli apartheid and genocide.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's a few different important, I would say, Twin Cities-based divestment campaigns, because that's mm-hmm. what this is. This is a divestment mm-hmm. campaign. And I don't know how much media this has gotten, but Zen City is an Israeli surveillance mm-hmm. company yep. that's contracted in Minneapolis.
Yeah, and with the Minneapolis Police Department.
That's right. And that's just like maybe another layer of disturbing, because what we're talking about now is an Israeli corporation collecting data on Minneapolis residents for the benefit of our police department, which we know, mm-hmm. You know, reports have been relatively recently released by the Department of Justice on just how rampant racism and all kinds of awfulness is in that department. So it's a very important campaign. And so they are calling for folks to contact Minneapolis City Council and the mayor mm-hmm. To demand that contract get cut as well. And it's been disheartening because, you know, the city council did pass a resolution in early 2024 that did have a divestment component to it. And yet we're still having to fight this fight. But I'm not as prepared as Cedar over here. I don't have numbers for you, but hopefully everyone listening is well connected and is contacting City Council about a variety of things.
You know,
so I would say
Marie,
to do that.
You're way more prepared than I am.
Yeah, your City Council members are good people to call for that because they make the decision on Zen City. So if you live in St. Paul, it would be your ward. But
this is a water commissioner.
This one is, the one I'm talking about, the Waterfall, is the Board of Water Commissioners is a bunch of people. Two of them are St. Paul.
Are they unelected?
Yeah, they're appointed.
They're appointed.
Yep.
Okay.
So they are the council people, there's two of them on the board. They are elected by the people, but then they're appointed to be on this commission.
Mm-hmm.
So like Sarah Jost in Ward 3 and now Molly Coleman in Ward 4 are the two that are part of this board. So if you live in their wards, or even if you don't, if you're a St. Paul resident, it is helpful to call those council people. But the phone number I gave is for the Board of Water Commissioners, where they take information on, you know, public comment and things like
that. Well, isn't the Minnesota State Board of Investments meeting coming up in the end of October?
October 21st.
And they've canceled meetings because they don't want to face community. Community's been loud about this.
Yep, they cancel, they postpone, they do all kinds of things to avoid.
And we're talking about Minnesota State Board of Investments divesting from Israel. For those who don't know, millions upon millions, if not billions of dollars invested in state worker pensions.
$5.3 billion in the state.
Massive. And that's pensions of state workers. We don't get a choice.
Right.
That's the issue here.
Right.
And so we've been calling on the State Board of Investments to divest mm-hmm. from apartheid and genocidal Israel.
Yeah, and I think the important thing about all the actions we've taken with Waterfall and with all these things are all in play. And what I think the bigger picture is that it's raising more consciousness, more awareness of, like, I don't know where my Central States pension fund, where their investments are. Mm-hmm. I really don't. I should take the time.
Oh,
to
it's
find
dark.
Out.
It's terrible. I mean, these are corporations that are profiting from genocide. Mm-hmm. Profiting from genocide.
Yeah,
folks. If you want some light reading, the UN Special Rapporteur Francesca Albanese is. From Economy of Occupation to Economy of Genocide, that was released in July, I believe, perhaps June, but relatively recently released, outlines, I believe it's over 40 corporations, and there's thousands, truly, mm-hmm. But outlines some and provides a lot of evidence around how these corporations are shifting toward investment in and it's not even, you know, it's quite literally the investment in the weapons, it's the investment in the economy of genocide. The genocide continuing mm-hmm. is beneficial to corporations, and so that's the dark dirtiness of it.
Yeah. And unfortunately, I think a lot of times people would say, "Well, I don't want to mess with my really nice pension by making waves about divestment. Mm. I'm living a nice life and." I'm living off the golf course here in Florida. Why do I want to get ruffle any feathers? Well, you should.
I mean, I would ask them if they've been watching what's happening.
And I
was talking to a neighbor about this recently. Like, whether we recognize it or not, every single person is being a very deep moral injury being inflicted upon all of us. You know, moral injury is something that. Is getting more attention in the veterans community, and it's something that we're talking a lot more about, and that some investment is being made from the Department of Veterans Affairs and Veterans Healthcare to help address moral injury, but it's not, and it's devastating in veterans. Yeah. I certainly have struggled with my own for my entire life and will continue to do so, but it's something that every single one of us has, especially now, because once you know what is happening, your failure to act, failure to do anything about it, is inflicting harm upon you. And I just wish that that's something that we could recognize more of. But there's a lot of different things that I believe help alleviate and heal that moral injury that have to do with reducing our complicity and really trying to stop. The horrors that are causing harm to other people, to children in Gaza, to children here, to families here. And that is also healing to us. So I also wanted to plug a very important direct aid campaign, Give for Gaza, which is organized by Minnesota Families for Palestine. We have been organizing direct aid for four very large Palestinian families in central and northern Gaza who are going through just unimaginable horrors every single day, losing people, struggling to find food, struggling to find shelter. It is just an absolute terrible thing. And one thing that's so beautiful about direct aid is you know that the money that you are sending is being sent directly to the people who need it. They use these funds to pay for the essential food, medicine, even water. They have to, one of our families is experiencing displacement. I mean, they've all experienced displacement multiple times, but one of our families is actively experiencing really terrible displacement coming from the north. And, you know, we're talking $2,000-$3,000 just to get a truck, just to get out of there. And so we are raising funds every single week to send to them. So I would just ask folks to think about contributing to this direct aid campaign and considering making it a part of your sort of like giving portfolio, if you will, like divest from things that are causing harm and invest in things that are repairing harm. And that's giveforgaza.org, G-I-V, the number four, Gaza, G-A-Z-A.org.
Okay, unfortunately, I have to look at the clock on the wall. So the time isn't as I thought it would be. It was a fast hour.
Can I say one?
We could do an hour and a half easily. Cedar, last words.
I just want to promote the protest coming up on October 7th at the Federal Building in Minneapolis. That's going to be Tuesday, October 7th at 5 p.m. downtown.
5 p.m. downtown, the Federal Building.
Yeah, and I've got one very quickly, if I may. I know I just did my Give for Gaza, but I have one more. So I'm a member of the rapid response team for the Global Samud Flotilla, and particularly the Veterans Boat. And we have just under two dozen U.S. Americans who are currently being held in Israeli detention for attempting to break the illegal Israeli blockade on Gaza. They were abducted, and there are some really horrifying reports coming out about the abuse and torture that they are experiencing. And so I would ask everybody to please contact your representatives, our own representatives, but also those who are aboard the Global Samud Flotilla. And if you want more information about that, you can email VFP National. This is a VFP National campaign, so check out VFP's website.
Toolkits. They have toolkits.
We have toolkits available to make everything as easy as possible for you. But we got to get our people home so we can get them healing and back in the fight.
Right. Anyway, as usual, another fast hour, and we'll see you in the streets.
See you in the streets.
See you in the streets.
You've been listening to The Wave Project, KFAI's Community Access Hour. If you'd like to find out how you can produce your own one-hour radio program, check the KFAI website at kfai.org/waveproject. The Wave Project. It's anything you want it to be. You're listening to Fresh Air Community Radio,